We need to respect the view of everybody who was seated around the table during this co-design process.
The solution is not only with government, but it is with everybody who is a stakeholder in the community. It's a giant step.
Welcome to the fifth episode of Season 3 of Ocean Insight, the podcast series brought to you by the Meerwissen Initiative and the UN Decade of Ocean Science for Sustainable Development. My name's Kira G. I'm an MSP expert and scientist working at Helmholtz Zentrum Herion in Germany.
My name is Alison Clausen. I'm the Deputy Director of the UN Decade of Ocean Science for Sustainable Development at UNESCO's Intergovernmental Oceanographic Commission. And Kira and I are delighted to be your co-hosts for the podcast.
This episode is dedicated to nature-based solutions, understood here as a way of working with nature and as parts of nature to achieve multiple benefits. We're asking what makes for a good nature-based solution and what is needed to scale them up for lasting impacts.
As always, we have some amazing guests with us here today, and we're really excited to give a big welcome to Dr. Idem Mahu from the University of Ghana, who we believe is actually doing the recording in a laboratory, which I think is the first time for us. And also a very, very warm welcome to Tokwe Kumasa, who is the spokesperson for the Paramount Chief of the Anlo State. And both of you are here representing the Mankoga Project in Ghana, and this is an endorsed project under the UN Decade of Ocean Science for Sustainable Development, so we're very pleased with that. And Mankoga stands for Mangroves as Nature-Based Solutions to Coastal Hazards in Eastern Ghana. And the aim is really to help mitigate erosion and flooding along Ghana's east coast. But before we get into any details of the project and how it's working, maybe you can both briefly introduce yourselves and talk about your current roles. So, Idem, if we can start with you.
Good morning, and thank you very much for having me on the show, Alison and Kira. My name is Idem Mahu. I'm a marine biogeochemist here at the University of Ghana, and I'm also the lead, or one of the co-leads, actually, for the Mankoga project. Thank you.
Great. And Tokwe Kumasa, could you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your role?
I am Tokwe Kumasa, the co-chair for Mankoga in Ghana. I'm the spokesperson to the Paramount Chief Anglo State, and I'm a retired headmaster. I did geography and sociology in the University of Ghana.
Thank you so much. Thank you to you both. I'd like to start with a fairly general question and ask you very briefly, what actually are nature-based solutions and why do we need them? And more importantly, also, what actually makes for a good nature-based solution? Perhaps, Idem, we can start with you.
Yes, so nature-based solution. I would like to start by saying that we all know that our planet, which is the Earth, is confronted with a lot of challenges. And a lot of times we have tried to address some of these challenges using engineering measures or solutions. But these hard engineering measures, sometimes they are good for the short term, but in the long term, some of them do fail us again. And so basically what nature-based solutions are solutions that we actually depend on or use from nature. So we look at the services that are provided by nature, ecosystem services, and then use them in addressing social and environmental problems. And nature-based solutions are very, very important for a lot of reasons, because as they are helping us to address environmental challenges such as the climate change mitigation, pollution and flooding, erosion and what have you, we also stand to get some other socioeconomic benefits from these nature-based solutions. They create jobs, and which can also help to improve livelihoods and enhance food security. In addition to that, we also derive some cultural and nutritional values from these nature-based solutions. And then when we even talk about resilience to natural disasters, these nature-based solutions feature so much in this natural, in helping to address some of these natural disasters. And so the science is proving that it is good that we actually complement the engineering with nature to help address some of these environmental challenges that we are currently facing.
That sounds absolutely comprehensive and like a real win on all fronts in a way. So nature benefits, but also people, communities, ways of life, if you like. And I also like the complementarity that you've just mentioned between some of the more technical solutions we've been relying on in the past and working with nature much more.
Exactly. So after that fabulous description of what nature-based solutions are, let's look then at a project that is really putting these into operation on the ground. So Togbi, I'd like to come to you. We've talked about the Mangkhurga project, that it's an endorsed project under the Ocean Decade, and it was part of a co-branded call for projects that the decade undertook with the MIRWISN initiative. But can you tell us what this project actually is? What is it designed to do?
Yeah, before I go to the project, let me give my concept of nature-based solutions. The word nature in my culture is God.
Anything nature-based means God-based. Technology is to assist us to discover nature's solution to nature's problems. Now that we have applied technology to solve the original problem that we have without much success, it is now better to use technology to seek nature-based solutions. So from the Mankuga viewpoint, in our area here, the sea destroys our land. And not only the land, but the vegetation of the land, especially the mangrove. So when Mankuga decides to regenerate the mangroves through policies by advising the farmers of mangrove what to do, we invite them and then explain to them. They also agree that the mangrove is the immense source of livelihood. And when the sea destroys the land, it destroys the mangrove also. And then they accept us as co-partners in solving the coastal erosion problem that we have in eastern Ghana.
So if I understand correctly, the Mankhoga project began back in 2022 and it's ongoing, isn't it? It actually doesn't end until 2025. I'm just wondering if it's possible already to see any impacts of the Mankhoga project so far. Perhaps you can give us one or two examples.
Yeah, you right. As you rightfully said, the project began last year. But just before I start talking about impact, I want to just add a little bit to what Togbi just said. For nature-based solutions to be very successful, there are some practices or measures that we need to put in place. That is where Mankoga comes in. Mankoga in itself is not doing mangrove restoration. What we are doing is to come out with a framework that can be used by communities, by policymakers, and other relevant stakeholders to implement a mangrove restoration program or project that can help to mitigate the flooding, erosion, and pollution problems that we have on the east coast of Ghana. So, one thing that can actually hinder a successful nature-based solution is the lack of data. This is where Mankoga comes in. We are helping to bridge the data gap that exists. We are looking at ecosystem services that mangroves actually provide, which can also feed into carbon credits or carbon trading programs globally. And then we are also looking at livelihood options, because along the east coast of Ghana, the mangroves that are actually there are owned by families. And so before you can successfully say that, okay, I want to use mangroves to solve this problem, I do not want anyone to touch the mangroves, you need to have in place livelihood options for them. Now, we started with a co-design phase. So we, the scientists, have the scientific idea and all that, and we put together a number of relevant stakeholders from the national level all the way down to the community level. So we are looking at policy makers, the local district assemblies, we are looking at the families, we are looking at the entire mangrove value chain. Now, I would say that, yes, we have seen some impact, significant impact from the co-design phase. The first of such impact is the buy-in from the stakeholders. So everybody on the table is very happy about the project or about Mankoga, because we all know that this is truly one of the solutions. When we started this project, we realized that there were communication barriers. And one thing that the co-design phase did was actually to help bridge or remove this barrier. So we have local community members like Togbi Kumasa here. He's able to share information and knowledge with scientists. He's able to speak to other stakeholders, because we have brought all those people together on one platform. Then another thing is the awareness that we have created during this co-design phase. So there were people who obviously didn't know that mangroves really can play a role as far as the mitigation of flooding, erosion, and pollution is concerned. When we designed the project, we did not even think about the livelihood issues. And with this important feedback and input from the stakeholders, we now have a whole component at the implementation phase that is looking at sustainable livelihood. So for me, it's already exciting, and I will now give it to Togbi Kumasa.
Thank you very much. The co-design is very comprehensive, because for the first time, the chiefs, who are critical stakeholders, have been brought on board. The word chief in our language means somebody who swears. What does he swear to do? To protect the institutions that constitute the state. And one of the institutions is the livelihood of the people over whom he is a chief. As a chief, anything that will protect the environment of where the citizens dwell is of paramount importance. So for the first time, since the co-design, the chiefs feel to be part of the designers. Earlier interventions excluded the chiefs. Now, another important step taken in the co-design stage was that in order to catch the farmers young by involving the school children, now we are trying now to introduce mangrove clubs in the schools to make the children interested not only in the mangroves, but to see the mangroves as part of their existence, knowing that when the mangroves are destroyed, their existence is also destroyed. Formerly, it wasn't like that. Now, the carbon emissions is quite a new intervention. The people did not know that when the mangrove absorbs carbon dioxide to produce oxygen, the carbon is stored in the leaves, in the trunks, in the roots, and in the soil, and that they are not aware that that carbon can be prized, can be credited to their accounts. So this carbon credit is a new phenomenon and is very, very acceptable to the people, because if they do not cut the mangrove, then they can rear bees, they can have beehives, and they can also rear some fish species, which will be bigger than the one they caught in the wild. So we are very sure that the new program, when introducing them, first they will feel that they own the program.
And just to add the last bit of it to what Togbi just said, it is interesting to know that at the end of the co-design phase, we had a theory of change. We met, and the community actually came, the stakeholders together came out with a slogan for Mankoga, which for us, the scientists, was super exciting. They came out with a local slogan, which, says Mankoga, Nyatwe, which locally translates as Mankoga is ours, we own it. So that is the buy-in that we are talking about here through the co-design phase.
I'd be very interested to talk about that a bit more because co-design is really central to what we're trying to do in the Ocean Decade. We're trying to, really encourage not only scientists, but all actors who are working in the ocean space to think about the way they design and implement projects differently. And that means co-design. So I was wondering, what advice would you give to other partners, to listeners of the podcast, things that they should be aware of, so others that may be listening can start thinking about how they could take a similar approach to the development of their nature-based solutions projects.
I would say that it has been a very interesting journey. You have to really make the time for it. Co-designing a project itself is not cheap. It involves a lot of financial commitment. And this is where I give it up to the Mere Vision team. Bringing together the stakeholders means that you have to get people to stop their livelihood activity for the period that you want to engage them and come and sit and work with you. You also need to understand that you're working with people with different values, communities with different values. And so for us, right from that, the scratch, we came out with our ground rules, which respect was one of those rules that we need to respect the view of everybody who was seated around the table during this co-design process. And indeed, we had some challenges because we had people who could not speak out their mind, or people who thought that they said something and it was taken differently by others. You have to, in a way, study the culture of the people that you're working with. In this case, this is the Anglo people we are talking about. And before you even go into the community, you have to really learn about their cultures, their values, what they respect, and all that. I would say that respect is the number one tool if you want to really work with everybody, bring everybody on board, especially indigenous people, is the number one tool that you have to adopt. Toby, you want to add to that?
The concept co-design is very satisfying. The people feel they are part of the solutions which are being offered. There are illiterates among the people, but who have natural knowledge of the mangrove vegetation, even more than what we read in our books. Now, by bringing them together with the policy makers, the farmers, the fish smokers, it's like an idea about the universe, which is unity in diversity. For the first time, the cultural people also feel their views are being considered. Now, instead of designing the thing from the ivory towers, this time the design is starting from the bottom to the top. So when they talk, the technical people know how to rearrange their thoughts As she said, we had earlier interventions, but they did not succeed because the people's views were not taken into consideration. But this Mankunga project is tapping the ancient knowledge of the people. And then the slogan, which is now taking the projects as their own, is very refreshing. And when the response is, it is our own, that alone is a giant step forward.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And one phrase that you said there really, really sticks in my mind about helping the scientists to rearrange their thoughts. Because, you know, sometimes when we first talk to scientists about co-design, they think, okay, so it's us going out and changing the way the local community is working and thinking. But in fact, it's often in the other direction that we see some of the biggest changes through co-design. So it's wonderful really to hear that perspective and that you've had that same experience.
Science is to seek the purpose of God. His God created everything and he arranged the things in an order. And until you follow that order, you will not get the solution you want. And that order is not only in books, it's also in nature. Nature is a very big book, and those who are illiterate, observing how the tides behave, how the storms behave, how the vegetation grows, all these are not recorded in books. So that was why we call it a co-design, involving the illiterates, the literates, the intellectual, intelligentsia, the traditional people who believe that God controls nature. So the co-design to me is very much appropriate than the earlier design, which did not think much of the local people to whom the design had been meant for. And I'm very sure that this time, if we're able to ignite the desire, the feeling of the people that mangrove is them and they are also mangrove, until we let the children know that God placed them in the environment to protect the environment, you must live in union with God's creation. And that's the way to go forward now. Not to have dominion, but rather to live in union with God's creations. And God is nature.
That's a wonderful way of putting it, I would say. In tune, I think, you know, with the co-design idea. And I also like another thing that you said, which was to, you know, to ignite that spark, I guess, in people to really want to make this their own project, to really want to take this forward in the best possible way. We clearly need to think of ways to have more projects like this, to scale them up right across a country, right across the region. So I'm just wondering, do you think that this is even possible? And where do you see the greatest challenges when it comes to taking that next step of actually scaling up the solutions that you are developing locally with the local community?
Yes. I think that it is possible. We can do it. We need to, first of all, the will needs to be there, and we need to be talking to our funding agencies. I know Alison is working at the highest level as far as the Ocean Decade is concerned, and I think that we need to start selling this idea of co-design to donors. That when we want to design any projects, any scientific project, any solution, there should be a component of co-design in that project. We need to look at how do you call it, the sociocultural factors that exist within the areas that we want to go into, or where we want to have this nature-based solutions. And if we talk about sociocultural factors, we are looking at things like even the land tenure system. So when you go to other parts of the world, the mangroves are owned by the state. And so it is very easy for the government to just say that, okay, we want to implement this project here. We don't want anybody to cut the mangroves. Now, if you come to Ghana, we practice a tenure system where lands are vested in the names of tribes and people. So it means that the mangrove itself that we are looking at belongs to a family, belongs to a tribe. That is one thing that we need to really consider strongly. We need to look at what? Nature-based projects that can work or that can operate with other projects. So we are not looking at fragmented projects. How can we leverage other nature-based projects to even broaden the impact that we are looking at? We also need to plan things with climate change and other uncertainties in mind. We need to look at the policy and governance framework. Policy makers, they're all part of the stakeholders. We brought all of them to the table so that whatever recommendations we make to them, they are able to implement it and ensure that the project becomes, or the project becomes a success in the long term. I would defer it now to Togbi, if he has any thoughts to share as well.
The chiefs and the fishermen belong to the same class. The fishermen look up to the chiefs as their leaders. Now that they are also affected by the coastal erosion, losing much fishing grounds. Now, when the idea of restoration or nature-based solutions brought, and some of these fishermen also own the mangrove vegetation. And now they realize that they themselves are part of the solution. Before then, the solution is thought to be residing in central government. Now that we are bringing them in, that the solution is not only with government, but it is with everybody who is a stakeholder in a community. It's a giant step.
Thank you very much for that. Very interesting points and very important points, I would say. And I'm hearing empowerment as one of the key factors also for, scaling up nature-based solutions, making sure there's more approaches just like that. But then also that very essential link to policy making at the national level and understanding the system that you're working with, the institutional context that you're working with. We are coming close towards the end of our conversation, and I'll hand over to you, Alison, to look towards the future.
Yes, exactly. It's been a very rich and wonderful conversation. But as we come to a close, and as we always do, we do like to look towards the future. And I have one question for each of you. So starting with you, Adam, you're involved in the Ocean Decade in many ways, not only this project, but you've also been a key lead in the Vision 2030 process, which is really trying to look at future priorities for the decade, involved in other programs and projects. So I'd like to ask you, given all those roles that you play in the decade, in terms of transforming ocean science, what would you like to have achieved by 2030 as part of the Ocean Decade?
Thank you very much for that question. It's a big question for me. But I think that at the end of the ocean decade, I want to see the whole ocean science community really working together. Before we started the decade, there was not enough communication between the global north and the global south. And that resulted in the under exploration of areas of the ocean that are within the global south. By the time we finish the decade in 2030, we want to see more participation or more collaboration between the north and the south. We want to see that the capacity that we need to deliver the science that we want is no longer unbalanced, but there is some amount of, you know, equal or equality as far as the capacity, the knowledge, the skills, the technology that we need to really address the challenges that we are looking at. Those capacities are very well and equitably represented. That is what I want to see at the end of the decade.
Wonderful. I share all of those hopes and look forward to working with you to achieve that great ambition. And Topui Kumasa, for you, a final question. What makes you hopeful that nature-based solutions could have lasting and sustainable impacts in Ghana and beyond in coming years and decades?
Now, to add to what Doug says, God gave mankind three spheres: the lithosphere, the hydrosphere, and the atmosphere. But the hydrosphere is not fully being explored because they don't know what lies in the oceans. Because of that, the global ocean idea, which is now linking the north to the south, is very laudable. I still maintain that nature is God. Anybody who believes in him and seek his face will surely direct you how to use nature to solve natural problems like climatic change. That is why vegetation becomes the main component of climatic solutions. That is why God himself created the plants to absorb the excess carbon dioxide and give us oxygen. Now, if you continue to clear the vegetation, it's like somebody who is always cutting his hair, his bald head, cannot withstand the heat from the sun. Now that we are bringing this concept to the stakeholders, they are now accepting that they can still maintain the ecosystem by regulating the nature here. I refer to the mangrove, the natural hair that God used to cover the face of the earth. By maintaining the natural hairs, by protecting the mangrove, the nature-based solution is achievable. And secondly, that when they accept that the solution, the co-design was their creation, they were part of the co-design, then it makes the work easier for all of us. So the future of nature-based solution is very bright. The people now understand that the solutions are for their own benefit and not for the benefit of those who are co-designing the project.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. What inspirational words and such a holistic vision to finish this discussion. I really love that story of the three spheres. I think it's one that will stick with me for quite some time. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Yes, I can only echo, Alison, what you've just said. Thank you. It's been so inspirational to really listen to you and what you've been doing with this co-design approach, bringing to life this word that we hear such a lot about, you know, co-design, but actually explaining what it means in practice, how it can actually work to really achieve lasting change. Thank you both very much for your time. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
Well, what an inspirational conversation that one was. Thank you so much to our two guests, and thanks to everyone for joining us. for this episode of Ocean Insight and the topic of nature-based solutions. If you like the show, make sure to subscribe and stay tuned for the next episode on sustainable fisheries, which will be available shortly. And of course, as always, feel free to follow, like, and share with friends and colleagues.